Thank you. Thank you. Michael, I see that you're online and we'll mark your attendance under modifications to the agenda. We're just waiting for a few more members to arrive in person. There's some traffic.
Okay, because all I hear is music and I'm getting nervous if I'm not in or not.
No, you're in the right meeting. We're just waiting for more staff, more members to arrive.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think if we could start, everyone. We're a little late just because we were waiting, but good morning. This is the Vision Zero Advisory Committee meeting on March 3rd. If we could call to order and do roll call, please.
So at this time, I'm only asking VZAC members attending in person to respond by saying "here" when I call your name. As a reminder, the button on the base, when you press it, the top part comes on and it's red and it means we can catch you on the recording and everyone can hear you. Tracy Phelps.
Here.
Bruce Rosenzweig.
Here.
Craig Pinder.
Here.
Ted Goodenough. Joanna Peluso. It's not working. Okay, well, my staff will switch.
I'm out. Here.
Oh, okay. Oh, but it's just not. Okay. They'll switch your microphone.
Okay.
Cool. Joanne Scaria.
Here.
Fadi Nassar. JC Berry. David Willock.
Here.
Jean Matthews.
Here.
Yash Nagal.
Here.
Michael Owens. Here. Christian Santa Gonzalez.
Here.
John Roach.
Here.
Brian Ruscher is excused. Larry Wallace and Stephanie Thoburn.
Here.
We have a quorum in person, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any modifications to the agenda?
Yes, Madam Chair. We have Michael Owens joining us virtually. He requested permission to participate remotely as the school district is still experiencing staff shortages and his presence in the office is required. And he is online.
Okay, thank you. Are there any objections to allowing Mr. Owens to participate remotely?
No.
Seeing none, if we can include his attendance.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. And let's see. The next item are the minutes for February 3rd, 2022. Are there any changes to the minutes from last month's meeting? If not, can I get a motion? Where's my motion maker? He's not here.
Motion to approve the minutes from the February 3rd meeting.
Thank you, Joanne.
Michael Owens, second.
Okay, Joanne and Michael, second. Can I, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Okay, so item D, general public comments. As a reminder, there are three ways to provide public comment for this Vision Zero Advisory Committee meeting. I got to keep saying that. Written comments may be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments may be made by a virtual attendee using the raise hand feature in the Zoom platform. And verbal and written comments may be provided in person by submitting a card at the welcome table in the back. Do we have any comments, public comments?
No, Madam Chair. And then for the record, Larry Wallace has joined us in person.
Thank you. Welcome, Larry. Okay. So comments from members. Does anybody have comments? Any comments? I see you there, John.
Just one thing I wanted to bring up. I don't know if it will be a discussion item for today or maybe on an agenda item for the future. Just based upon watching the last month's governing board meeting, I'd kind of like to have a discussion as to how the recommendations of the various committees, including ours, are conveyed to the governing board. I know the information is always contained in the backup information, but I think we all know that not everyone reads the backup information or to that level of detail. So I'd either make a request or have a conversation about whether our recommendations can be included in the verbal presentation that staff presents to the governing board. I know at West Palm, as well as some other previous employers that I've done planning presentations to, we always include the planning board recommendation and things like that as part of our staff presentation. So I think it would be beneficial and fair to the discussion that we have here and how that's conveyed to the advisory committee. So, you know, I don't know if we want to have a discussion item or if that's just a request that we can make of staff for those governing board meetings.
Jean?
Yes, this advisory board voted and felt strongly that the name should change to Vision Zero, the bike ped. And that was never verbally said at the meeting. So when they voted to change the name, unless they read into the backup documents, they didn't know that was the desire of this committee. And when I saw that the name had been changed, and I thought, wow, we're our own committee, and we voted and we had a consensus and it was changed kind of against our will. And then when we find out that it wasn't even presented by staff, by the way, the committee would like to have this name. And if people didn't read deep, they didn't know what our desire was. And I completely agree with John. We need to have a discussion, and maybe it should be a discussion item. When we make recommendations and we take a vote, I'd like them verbally said in the main meetings.
So that is definitely something, ooh, that's loud. We can talk about, sorry. We can talk about internally for moving forward. It should be noted that part of the discussion that did come up at the TPA governing board meeting was that a member did mention the desire, the recommendation by the committee, but they still voted to move with the Vision Zero Advisory Committee due to both the length of the acronym and the various letters that would be in VZBPAC, but also they felt that it was more in line with our goals and objectives as an agency. So ultimately, you know, how the TPA governing board votes is the direction that we move in, but that is something that we can discuss, like I said, internally moving forward.
I see Valerie getting up.
Good morning, everyone. Valerie Nielsen. I just wanted to mention that's a great feedback. We can make that point. It is in the minutes, in the agenda also for the board on what each member voted. So in the board agenda, it does say that. But we also do agenda review meetings with the board and review that information with board members beforehand. So one-on-ones to explain this is the recommendation. This is what the committee advised. So I just wanted to note that, but we can also, again, you know, mention it verbally in the presentation.
Just a follow-up. And I understand that the governing board is going to make their decision, you know, regardless of any, you know, whether they choose to follow the committee's recommendations or not. You know, I think even just a simple slide at the very end of the presentation that says, you know, here's what the recommendation, especially for those items that go to multiple committees. You know, simply outline, you know, here's what the technical advisory committee said or what their vote was, and just putting it on the record for the public to see and for all those board members that weren't able to attend a gender review or things like that. So I think it's just beneficial to put the information and the vote of the committee out into that and make it a part of that presentation, I think is fair to what happens here at this meeting.
I think that's fair. Okay. Was there any more comments? I did have a couple of comments. One is that for those of you, we had the Safe Streets Conference. Was it last week? It feels like so long ago, but it was really good. And it was my first one. So I was really glad that I went. And congratulations to Joanna, as well as Brian Ruscher, for being nominated for an award, and then the Gardens won. It was the Gardens mayor who won, vice mayor who won, and that was related to their TOD in the garden. So it was neat to see and to experience and to ride the train. It really surprised me how when you take transit, how very little I actually walked, because I checked my steps that day and I was really surprised that I had only walked 5,000 steps and I went down to Miami and took the train. But for next year, I encourage us all to go and get that picture that we were trying to get. The second item was that Alyssa and Valerie and Connor and Melissa and came and did a walk bike audit in the town of Jupiter last week. And it was in a low-income neighborhood that was being served by Jupiter Elementary School. Joanna was there with, your people were there. And it was really eye-opening. So anyone who hasn't done a walk bike audit with TPA staff really needs to do it. If you're trying to get a project coordinated and funded in your municipality, starting off with that is a great option. So that we had the principal there from the elementary school, and everybody got to see how all these little kids, 5, 6, 7 year old kids, were walking alone with no parents, and there were no sidewalks. So it was great to document and see how, you know, such need. So thank you guys for doing that, because now we can start moving forward with budgeting and get everyone on board. And that's what it was all about. So there are no other comments. Alyssa, you have, oh.
I'm sorry, just for the record, I wanted to note that Ted has arrived.
Good morning, Ted and Ted's companion. So Alyssa, thank you. Your VZAC liaison report. I gotta keep saying it.
It's gonna take some adjustment for everyone.
Yes.
But good morning, everyone. It's great to see lots of smiling faces in here early this morning. I'm gonna run through the liaison report quickly. So March is Florida Bicycle Month. You have all heard me preach this last month, and I will continue to preach it all month. Please definitely try to participate in some of the events that we're going to be hosting this month. We have a webinar series going on, as well as our TPA ride next Friday, March 11th at 7:45 a.m. We're going to be leaving at our office promptly at 8, and it's going to be a great ride highlighting lots of different destinations in downtown West Palm Beach. If you do plan to join us, please be sure to RSVP either directly to me or on our website. Additionally, it's great to highlight FDOT is going to be hosting, or is hosting, a Love to Ride challenge for Florida Bike Month that is occurring March 1st through March 31st. So it's going now. Today is the third day. So if you haven't registered to participate, definitely do it now. It's a great opportunity to win some awesome prizes. The March TPA Governing Board is going to be held on March 17th at 9 a.m. or St. Patrick's Day. This is going to be both in person and virtually. The agenda packet and meeting details are available on our website, and the meeting will be streamed live. Nobility and Economic Development Panel will be happening at the TPA on Thursday, March 31st at 10 a.m. to noon. Please register in advance for this. This is going to be with TPA and local industry leaders for a panel on mobility and economic development that's associated with it. The U.S. Department of Transportation announced $1.5 billion in the 2022 grant cycle for the Rebuilding American Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity, or RAISE, discretionary grant program. Applications are due April 14th, 2022. More information is available on the website. In the liaison report, the National League of Cities launched a safety first challenge to build a coalition of 100 plus cities and towns who want to join the safety movement by taking steps in their communities. For more information, please visit the website available in the liaison report. And then the TPA administers three competitive application processes annually for the funding of projects located within Palm Beach County. This year's applications are provided on the following page, which I will talk through in a moment. Please note that there are no formal state road modifications applications that were submitted. However, the list of state road modifications or SRM projects has over $200 million in needs already identified. TPA staff and jurisdictions are also evaluating upcoming FDOT resurfacing projects for safety and complete streets opportunities that can also be added into the final list of priority projects. So with that, I am going to dive into some of the funding applications that were received for this year. Just quickly, I do want to note that we're just going to highlight all of them now. We will discuss these at the April meeting. Now, quick note about the April meeting. A lot of you have participated in these in the past. We are going to be actually holding it in the morning as well, since it's a shortened agenda. And all four projects are eligible for funding, and we do have funding to fund all four projects. So for that reason, we're not going to be doing that meeting in the afternoon. It will just be a better usage of staff and member time to do it in the morning. But with that, I will highlight the four transportation alternatives projects that were submitted. The first is from the City of Palm Beach Gardens. This is on Fairchild Avenue from Fairchild Gardens Avenue to Campus Drive. And this is for buffered bike lanes and a sidewalk. The City of West Palm Beach applied to us for funding for 49th Street from Greenwood Avenue to Flagler Drive, and this includes traffic calming and bicycle improvements like Sharrows. The Indian Trail Improvement District applied to us for funding for Hamlin Boulevard, Grapeview Boulevard, and Citrus Grove Boulevard. All three roadways will have a similar project implemented, and that is a shared use path on one side of the roadway, an expansion of the existing sidewalk on the other side of the roadway to create an 8-foot sidewalk instead of a 5-foot sidewalk. And then lastly, the Village of Royal Palm Beach applied for a village-wide pedestrian wayfinding network. So the total available funding this year is slightly above $3.3 million. So with that, the total for all four of these projects is $3.125 million. So great news, everyone. There's enough funding there for all four projects. But with that, that is the end of my liaison report.
Were there any public comments?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. So Okay, let's see. Do we have any other members who want to comment on what Alyssa presented? No? Oh, okay.
No, just John. Have one question. The Mobility and Economic Development Forum, that's being offered virtually as well, correct?
Yes, so it will be a virtual and in person, correct? Yeah, virtual and in person.
I just saw in the presentation that it was here at the office, but I just want to make sure that was still being offered.
Yeah, so when we do webinars and events in the office, they're usually streamed online. We know that not everyone has the availability to get out of their office sometimes.
Thank you.
Joanna?
I just have a question, also very loud, for clarification, not clarification, just for like my edification. So when you talk about the state road modifications and then evaluating it with staffs and jurisdictions to work towards complete streets, could you just like walk me through kind of that process? And then, because there's state road modification resurfacing projects that you're like obviously trying to put better sidewalks, right? Bike lanes and all that. But like what or how much like resistance do you come up with against stuff like that?
So for the state, for the resurfacing projects, we're working with DOT and the municipalities to figure out what could potentially go on there. These resurfacing projects are future roadway resurfacing projects that DOT is looking at for outer years. So this is currently fiscal year 2027. So right now we're just identifying what could go there. The intent is then as we work through the scoping of the project, the cities in as well as DOT and TPA staff would go out to the municipalities and the residents out there to see what they want, see what they would like to see in there. But these are really far out. So it's just really preliminary scoping efforts. Yeah.
Anybody else? I'm glad to hear we can fund all of the grants this year, because that's what this board does, is to figure out what are the priorities. So that makes things easier to at least not have to rank. So I'm all for changing it up a little bit this year, given the number of grant applications. I'm sure next year with more infrastructure money coming, we'll be able to meet next year. So welcome, Fadi. Yes, traffic was very, very bad, making our job even more important. So the next item, which is our first and only action item, is regarding the adoption of the 2022 legislative policy procedures. And Andrew, the TPA Deputy Director of Program Development, will present this item.
Yes. Good morning, everyone. So I'll be presenting on the 2022 legislative and policy positions. This is an action item. The backup included just the one page of the statements, 11 statements of positions. And then the second page on there had some notes that go along with a little bit more information about details about why those are chosen. So I'm going through these, and these are the second time we're going around doing these. We did them last year as well. And really, these are things that we push at the federal and state level, and sometimes at the regional level, to get changed. I know a lot of your jurisdictions may also pass legislative and policy positions. And if you do pass those, we'd love to have those as well on record, so we can work through those and see if there's any additional things to meet our vision here of a safe, efficient, connected multimodal transportation system. So again, we are here to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund transportation. And you'll see that the setup of these policy positions is based in the categories of our vision. So it's safe, efficient, connected, and multimodal as the categories. And there's statements under each of those categories. So why do we have legislative policy positions? It's really to grow local consensus on a future mobility vision for Palm Beach County and then also our region, balancing projects and land development patterns, and then considering timely pursuit of additional revenue sources. We also look to advance the TPA and the Southeast Florida vision together in the state legislature. So that includes Broward, Miami-Dade, and Palm Beach. And then we look to influence federal transportation funding or policies. Recently, there was the new infrastructure bill that had over $500 billion in new spending over 5 years from the previous transportation spending bill. And so that totals together around $1.2 trillion. The TPA actually hosted a webinar 2 days ago from Holland and I, which is one of the federal consultants we use. And they gave an updated presentation about just a summary of the types of investments we're seeing in that bill. And that's available on our website. So these policy positions are really a combination of a different, diverse amount of adopted documents that we have at the TPA, the region, and then also with our partner agencies. That includes our 2045 long-range transportation plan, our Vision Zero action plan that was updated in 2021. It also includes some of the legislative policy positions that we passed together with the Metropolitan Planning Organization Advisory Council at the state level. So that includes all the MPOs in the state. And then it also includes some of the regional mobility visioning from our Southeast Florida Regional Transportation Plan for 2045. And again, that includes our partners to the south, Broward and Miami-Dade. And I want to go high level through these different statements. They're in your backup. So I'll try to keep it brief. The first is when it comes to safety. The first ones are to change state or federal law to expand the distracted driving law. Right now in Florida, it only includes texting while driving. So expanding that law for all phone, handheld devices and anything you're doing on them. Obeying crossing guards, allowing automated speed enforcement in more locations, requiring helmets for both bicyclists and motorcyclists, and including safety technology on new vehicles. There's also to require enhanced education for safe walk and bike curriculum in schools. Driver's education in high school, requiring a passing a test of pedestrian, bicycle, and motorcycle laws to obtain a renew driver's license every few years. And then roadway safety to information distributed to rental car companies. So if you're coming to the state from out of state and you are renting a vehicle, you have material available for you there to learn more of those sort of unique Florida driving or biking or pedestrian laws. The last part of the safety is revising roadway design standards to base them more on context classification and to use target speed for that context instead of just the existing speed on the roadway. And then allowing the installation of safe pedestrian crossing treatments at mid-block and unsignalized locations. So creating more flexibility in our ability to put out those types of safety treatments. A lot of these design standards have been begun being integrated into the state's design manual for Florida that oversees state roadways. And they made a lot of progress in the past few years when it comes to context classification and setting a target speed and providing the types of countermeasures to slow down drivers out there on the roadway. So a lot of these things are really a push now also at the federal level to integrate into the design standards that get brought down to the states for local roadways. Next is efficient, and it's to advance autonomous, connected, and electric vehicles and infrastructure funding, and to allow the MPOs, such as ourselves, more funding flexibility to maximize efficient delivery of transportation products on local facilities. And what we mean by those sort of ideas for funding flexibility, one thing, for example, is other states have that we don't have in Florida, is called a federal to state funding swap. So other states swap their, like for example, an MPO can swap their federal funds that we receive. For example, your transportation alternatives, our local initiatives, those federal fundings that we receive, we swap it with the state. And so we would receive state funds that no longer have the federal requirements attached to them. And then the state uses all that federal funding on additional products that they're doing, that they're already doing on their state system. So it provides more flexibility to just use state funds instead. A little bit easier of a implementation process for projects. Next is connected to promote complementary land use patterns around existing and future high capacity transit routes, and then to use existing maintenance funding and pursue additional funding to construct roadways with enhanced ped, bike, and transit facilities, especially near high capacity transit hubs. and then multimodal to advance a regionally connected, high capacity and efficient transit system to support anticipated growth and mobility, and to increase flexibility within existing state transportation programs to allow the funding of high capacity transit investments and supporting infrastructure. And what we mean by high capacity transit is really moving more people more efficiently. So that can go from at the lower level, you know, dedicated bus rapid transit in mixed lanes with traffic. Maybe it's their own dedicated lane, or it can go all the way up to light rail. But it's about high capacity, moving more people more efficiently. And lastly, allowing flexibility with the strategic intermodal system funds for facilities not on the SIS, if their improvement will enhance mobility or freight on the SIS network. So there's a strategic intermodal system network for the state, which is the major roadways in our state, the interstate, the turnpike, and a few other major roadways, the ports, the airports, and there's SIS funding that goes directly towards those. What we were looking for with this is a lot of MPOs, and this come out of the state MPOs council, is to ensure that we have more flexibility with that funding to use off the SIS system, as long as it still benefits the SIS. And lastly, to seek additional funding sources at all levels to build, operate, and maintain high capacity transit system. And so you'll see a lot of those for the high capacity transit system. These are all ones that came out of our regional plan. And that really includes Broward, Miami-Dade, and us for our area, and then other metropolitan areas as well in the state who are looking to invest more heavily into high capacity rail and other types of transit to have more flexibility and seek additional revenue sources that way. And that's all I have for you for the statements. So next steps, how do we really incorporate these things from a staff perspective as we move forward and implement these policies? We collaborate with our partners to unify on these priorities. I already mentioned our Southeast Florida regional partners. We have our MPO advisory council at the state level. In that group, we also have a liaison who is directly works with FDOT and is housed in an FDOT office. So they have communications with the state when it comes to the needs of the MPOs. We're being proactive in providing feedback when there's federal government and state updates to policies. So if there's federal updates to design guidelines or funding and how they administer that funding, or if there's an update to state policies like the Florida Transportation Plan, we'll integrate those sort of these ideas into those plans. And then the lastly is to educate community and elected officials on these policies. And that's all I have for you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Staff, do we have any public comment?
No, Madam Chair.
I see Jean with her. Oh, there's and Dave. Okay, so let me write down. Jean, if you want to go.
No, I'm really excited to see the ability to swap federal funds with state funds, because I'm a grant writer for the Palm Beach, for the Parks Department, and our federal grants cost us much more to build because there's so many regulations. And we get a lot of state grants as well, and they're much easier. So it's not only a cost savings, it's an efficiency and time management. It's a really big deal, actually. So I'm impressed with that.
David?
Under the safety heading, I thought a lot of those proposed new laws were great ideas, but it seems like the existing laws aren't really being upheld. And I don't know. We were talking about getting a sheriff's representative in here. I was wondering what the progress was on that.
Yes, your point about ensuring that we're enforcing the current laws in the books was a point, I think, also brought up by the TAC yesterday. And so that's a good point to make. Secondly, the status of that, you know, obviously we just passed that last month. I'm not sure if Alyssa, do you have any update on that?
Sure. So part of the process for that is working with our elected officials on the TPA governing board to get those the members on board. If you recall from my presentation last month, the members are the seats. So
looking at City of West Palm Beach. So City of West Palm Beach is a member, Jupiter is a member, Palm Beach County Engineering and Planning, those are each the members. So you guys are the representatives. So first we need the TPA governing board to approve the member positions, and then we will get representatives appointed. But we are still, you know, at the very beginning, early process of that, and getting the elected officials on the board to get those members first appointed.
I think we have talked about it for a couple of years, but I do look forward to hearing, you know, their kind of side of it. I'm sure, I don't know, living in Boynton, it seems like the Wild West down there, and there's just crazy stuff happening all over the place. And you're like, how is this person still on the road? But I don't know. I'd like the new laws, and I think they're all pretty much, you know, helpful. It would be more helpful if we had, you know, some backup from a sheriff's office right now, especially considering how much of my tax bill goes towards the sheriff's office. So, okay. I mean, a third of it.
Okay. Bruce?
Yeah, I, as an aspirational outline, this looks pretty good to me. I'm just curious to know if you've gotten into any specifics. For me, just say, specifically, let's say with the integrating electric and automated vehicles into the transportation system, has anything specifically been discussed?
No, it's just high level to more about providing supporting infrastructure for those, but we don't have any specifics about that. Okay.
Fadi.
Thank you. And mobility is extremely important. I mean, this is really the lifeblood of economy, of people getting to work, coming back. My issue is with the emphasis, which comes several times, as high capacity transit. This is clearly looking back. I mean, this is the old system. The newer system with driverless technology is going to be first adapted for buses, micromobility, and that's going to probably do it for the future. No longer, you know, you have to walk a long distance, may get you from your origin point, connect, you know, in real time with other people and take you to your destination without having to worry about the first mile or last mile. And, you know, as Bruce mentioned also, you know, there is, I mean, just think how a small transit system will cost compared to, you can convert all flashing yellow arrow for the same cost. You can, make all crossing, you know, with those rapid flasher. So transit cost, when you're talking about dedicated transit or anything like that, it's really very high. I mean, the dollar value extremely high. And this need to be compared with what else can be done. I am for mobility, to maximizing, you know, and also for equity, making sure everybody has equal way of accessing transportation. But the high capacity probably is looking to the past for failed system. The way to look for the future is maybe looking more into how technology can improve transportation and mobility without focusing on high capacity. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, first of all, I want to say I agree with you about the new technologies that are out there. And I think when I see high capacity, the thing that I'm thinking about is efficiency. I think what the idea here is to get as many people in one vehicle and then move them compared to, you know, the other technologies. The other technologies are always going to be there, and there's always going to be land users that will match the other technology. The reason first mile, last mile, and fixed route systems and BRT systems work so well is because one supplements the other, and they both combine to make a bigger system. And, you know, I think we should, the cost comparison thing is a really good idea, but we should look at the cost per passenger when we try to do these things. And, you know, that would be a fair thing. And then also, you know, the fare prices that transit has, our daily pass is $2. So that's something that we have to keep in mind too, is when we're thinking about equity, how much is it going to actually cost the customer to ride those rides? And there's a lot of systems that have done first mile, last mile, you know, over the years, Ubers and Lyfts and all of those technologies, but a lot of them have been running under subsidies. And, you know, there will be a time when those subsidies will go up. And, you know, that will have an impact on the customer who could previously take the fixed route bus. So if you remove the underlying fixed route, then that customer now only has to be dependent on an Uber or a Lyft. There is no underlying alternative that they can have. Long story short, my message kind of here is that both technologies are relevant, and I think both have their own place, and they work together rather than, you know, one or the other or old or new. So that's all. Thank you.
Fadi.
Yash, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. I mean, this is an important point, because once you go to technology that's going to dedicate a lane or maybe a fixed guideway, we're talking about huge amount of money, not just improvement to existing system. I have no issue with the existing bus system. If you want to add to it, you know, express buses, that'd be missed, you know, great. Having frequency, you know, bus operation going from 20 minutes to 50 minutes would be great. But my issue is when you dedicate a lane on already congested corridors for a bus, can I go, you know, four times an hour? First of all, it's not acceptable. People will not accept that. Second, I agree there are some location where transit, I mean, fixed guided transit may be appropriate. And we already have north-south connection. We have two rail lines, and enhancement on those would be great. Expanding, you know, Bright Line or anything similar would be wonderful. And I think that will support. But you have to look at the densities, at the map. I'm all for visions, but I think there need to be some efficiency, more like kind of mobility, cost effectiveness, that's going to be part of the equation. We are not Miami, we are not New York. And I hope, you know, we don't make decisions that's going to dedicate most of the sources for transportation for one system that we get stuck with it. And we know from all examples, you know, what work, what doesn't, and we know how things are moving to the future. And I like this kind of flexibility to be part of your vision. I think that would be important. Thank you.
Jean, go ahead.
You know, I have to agree with you. Safe Street Summit was simply amazing. But a couple of things that we were talking about, like Sheriff Department and enforcement, Washington, D.C. lowered, they had a speaker and they lowered their speed limit, I think, to 20. 7 miles over was a $100 ticket. And they just ticketed everybody. And they said that driver behavior, like in 6 or 7 weeks, completely changed. If you know you're going to speed and you're going to get a $100 ticket, you're going to stop. Remember, I used to be an appraiser, and Coral Springs would nab you like for 3 or 4 miles over, but stop you. It was kind of silly. But the other thing is first mile, last mile. On the way to the main conference, I took Tri-Rail, Metro Rail, Metro Mover, and then walked, and everything was clean. It was efficient. It was really a pleasant day going both ways, but it did take quite a bit of time. We did a walking tour of Little Haiti because the sea level rise has raised the water table so much that the septic tanks are no longer working. And so the drain fields don't work anymore. So, but I wanted to take public transportation to Soar Park in Little Haiti, and I could get within 3 miles, and I was determined, but then I didn't have a bus. So then I said, well, I'll just figure out Uber. I'm happy to do that. But it was the Uber ride was like $20 each way to get to Soar Park. I ended up getting in my car and driving because I couldn't get that last mile. So
I think from, you know, the discussion on high capacity, I mean, these are, we're talking about policy positions that TPA and the Vision Zero Advisory Board would recommend for future actions. And I think having a goal, like a lofty goal, like having zero fatalities or having high capacity multimodal services should be a goal of ours. And yes, it doesn't have to, like, for, you know, you can do it in ways that are efficient, so that it matches land use. But like in Jupiter, we don't want density. But do people want the train there in certain places on the existing rail line next to the hospital and next to the school? Yes. So I think it's, you know, I think it's a good thing and a lofty goal for us to have. So that's where I'm at. So if there's anybody else? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Tracy.
Yeah, I liked the presentation and the documents all about safety. The presentation and the documents were all great about the safety of the roadways and complete streets. We at the city of Boca went to DOT about putting 11 rapid flashing beacons on A1A at existing crosswalks. And we were met with resistance from that. We were told we could have 3 by them. Now the decision on safety was made when they allowed the crosswalk. All we were wanting to do was to make the crosswalks more safe. But we were still told we could have 3, we couldn't have 11. But if you go down to the Broward City line or the Broward County line and go on A1A and go into Delray Beach, Deerfield Beach, the first half mile, you have 5 rapid flashing beacons on that on A1A. So there is no consistency in this in their policy of safety or just a specific policy of rapid flashing beacons. So I would like to see something done with DOT on their policies. It seems like a haphazard policy in rapid flashing beacons. We ended up working it out. We got to talk to the actual operations engineer and discussed it. And we're going to get our 11 rapid flashing beacons, I think. We still haven't got the permit approved. But to get those, we got to do 3 before and after studies. So there's a caveat with our already low staffed and overworked department. But this was a case of us trying to make a road safer, a road with lots of pedestrian traffic. And everything sounded good. We did our research and the person who were working on this, we know the issues of rapid flashing beacons. And yes, if you put too many out there, people could think and just not avoid, could just avoid them. And well, a lot of people do that anyway. But so we're talking about all this safety, we're pedestrian bicyclist committee. You know, we tried to do something and we were met with resistance. So I would like to see some type of policy with us and DOT on, they don't seem to be following what we're trying to do sometimes. And that is all.
Okay. Anybody else? Do we have a motion?
I will move to recommend adoption of the 2022 legislative and policy positions.
Okay, the motion made by Joanne.
Seconded by Jean.
Seconded. Should we do roll call or?
It's your preference, Madam Chair.
Let's try individuals. If you can do roll call.
Roll call, okay.
Please.
Tracy Phelps.
Yes.
Bruce Rosenzweig.
Yes.
Craig Pinder.
Yes.
Ted Goodenough.
Yes.
Joanna Peluso.
Yes.
Joanne Scaria.
Yes.
Fadi Nassar.
No.
JC Berry has not joined us, so she will be marked as absent. David Willock.
Yes.
Jean Matthews.
Yes.
Yash Nagal.
Yes.
Michael Owens.
Yes.
Christian Santa Gonzalez.
Yes.
John Roach.
Yes.
Brian Ruscher is absent. Stephanie Thilburn.
Yes.
It passes with 1 opposed.
Okay, thank you. So the next item is an informational item. It's the draft fiscal year 2023 to 2024 Unified Planning Work Program. And Matthew Coma, is that how you say it? Comma, like a comma, who is the TPA Chief Financial Officer, will be presenting this item. And welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We do have a lot of acronyms. This is the one that's close to me, is the Unified Planning Work Program. I'll refer to it as the UPWP. This document serves as our two-year operational budget, operational plan and budget. It will serve the year July 1st, 2022 through June 30th of 2024. It also constitutes our application for federal grant funds, and it includes our tasks and identifies clearly what we're going to accomplish as deliverables, who will do that, whether it's staff or consultants, when we would do that, and how much we expect that to cost with the additional funding sources that will pay for it. We have seven core tasks within our UPWP. One, we engage the public. That's part of this presentation today. We want to engage your comments. In addition, we plan the system in the short range, more the five-year timeframe. We plan the system in the long range, which is our long-range transportation plan. Prioritize funding, implement projects, collaborate with our partners, and then administration of the agency. One change to note in this round of UPWP, again, these are a two-year cycle that we do these budgets and operational plans. In this round, there's a change to the funding structure or how those dollars get to our agency to administer. We are funded by Federal Highway Administration and Federal Transit Administration as two of our funding sources. And in the past, they have come as separate channels of funds. This year, or this cycle, they will come as a consolidated planning grant. So Federal Highway Administration, Federal Transit Administration, as well as the Florida FDOT, have worked together to make this into a singular grant. The expectation is that we could administer it in a more straightforward manner, but that's going to affect this funding cycle. And as identified here, that's a combination of Federal Highway PL funds, also known as our MPO planning funds, FHWA SU funds, or Surface Transportation Block Grant funds that we can use for planning, and Federal Transit Administration funds for MPO planning as well. Our revenue sources were, as mentioned, it's Federal Highway, Federal Transit Administration, as well as the Commission for Transportation Disadvantage within the state of Florida. And then we have some TPA local funds from local municipalities that support our agency. Our budget for fiscal year 23 is $4,900,000. And then fiscal year 24 is $4.78 million. We operate on a balanced budget structure that we have that revenue stream, and that's what we're going to operate within. So our expenditures, we break down into two portions based on their restrictions. Grant funds, as were mentioned previously, federal grant funds as well as state funds have different restrictions on them. And then we have our locally funded expenditures that we use to advance the mission of the TPA for truly a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system. And again, those expected expenditures in fiscal 23 are $4.9 million. And in 24, our $4.78 million in a balanced fashion with our revenues. In fiscal year, in this UPWP funding cycle, we are seeking to add an additional position to comply with additional grant and contract compliance requirements. Where we stand in the timeline of this process, here we are at the first step. We notify, we seek public comment on additional plans and activities that we could include in these next 2 years. We'll also take that to our governing board in a draft format on March 17th. We transmit that draft to FDOT. We get their comments. We'll make revisions. And then in May is our expected adopted final version. And then that's executed with the state and federal agencies so that our budget starts on July 1st. So we're at step one. We have a few steps to go. And then today we're seeking ideas, seeking input on how we can really advance our transportation vision for that safe, efficient, connected, multimodal transportation system. And on our website, there's a link as listed below in this presentation, but at palmbeachtpa.org/UPWP, where you can leave comments and other recommendations. And that constitutes my comments for today.
Sorry, staff, is there any public comments?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. See, Bruce.
Yeah, just so I'm clear on this, the county TPA is funded almost exclusively by the federal government.
I'll distinguish. So the TPA serves the Palm Beach County region.
Correct. Yeah.
So, and I just wanted to distinguish. There's the county board of county commissioners, and then there's the TPA. We serve the same region, but are separate in that sense. We are funded almost not exclusively, but 96% by federal funds by statute. The MPO is funded by formula funds that feed our agency from gas taxes collected in this area.
Is that the same model nationwide? Do you have any idea?
Mostly. The MPOs are established by population size, that an MPO is required to serve that area. And then how those funds are distributed among the agencies usually is a statewide formula, how that's done. But this is effectively how it's done. It's a combination of federal highway and federal transit dollars that fund the agency in the bulk. And then you'll see sometimes there's state funds for different initiatives, such as our Commission for Transportation Disadvantage.
And those three federal agencies, I assume, fall under the heading of the Department of Transportation, Federal Department of Transportation.
That's correct. And just to clarify, Federal Highway provides two of them, and Federal Transit provides the third one. So it's two agencies, but three types of funds.
I also thought that the cities, the municipalities pay an annual fee to the TPA. Is that correct?
That is correct. And okay. We identify that the red slice here is identified.
Oh, that's TPA. The red.
That represents that local contribution from our municipalities.
Okay. So that's what each city and municipality needs to provide. So we should, theoretically, those cities and municipalities should want to be part of this advisory board. So we're missing a few of those voices, just so when we go out to add more people to our committee, we make sure we have even voices from everyone who's basically paying. All right, was there anybody else? Do we need to? Okay, I don't think we don't need anything else on that. So the next item is administrative items. Okay. So there's items 4A through C, and they're for information only, and there's no staff presentations unless we need one, unless the committee wants one, and we can do any public comment after that. So I think that's it. Alyssa, you don't need to say anything? Is that it? Are we really done at 10 o'clock?
I told you it was going to be a quick meeting.
Okay. All right, well, our next, Tracy.
Just real quick, I'm gonna thank Alyssa. Back on the subject of RRFBs, we have one in our city that's very dangerous, and we contacted the TPA and Alyssa to have DOT help us take a look at that, and she's been very helpful. And we look forward to working with her and DOT on this particular location.
Jean?
And I just have one comment. Years ago, there used to be a tax credit on your income tax if you rode your bike to work a certain percentage of the time. Do we know if that's still, because I work in the park, John Prince Park, a lot of people ride their bike. Be interesting to know if that is still a tax break if you ride your bike.
I'm not aware of that being an active one right now, but I can definitely look into that and see.
Looks like the Matthew, CFO knows.
Matthew's going to address that.
You are correct. It was a previous tax allowance for bicycling or commuting via bicycle. It's no longer an active tax credit. So it's not available in that sense now.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Our next meeting is April 7th. 2022. We will all strive to leave a little earlier because of all the traffic. Thanks, everybody.